You are listening to a programme from BBC Radio 4.
When you look at what's happening over the course of pregnancy, the brain is undergoing a tremendous amount of structural change.
What we're talking about here is a critical developmental period that isn't widely recognized.
The mother-infant relationship starts during pregnancy.
The events of pregnancy change the brain in dramatic ways that will enable the female to more efficiently take care of her offspring.
I'm standing in the maternity ward at King's College Hospital, surrounded by scores of women in agony. Sorry, the mind-blowing miracle of new life. Over the past 9 months, these women's bodies have been through changes, some more visible than others, most of which medical science knows quite a bit about. In this programme, I'm going to explore the changes that take place inside a pregnant woman's brain, an area of women's health we know surprisingly little about. During pregnancy, the mother's body is awash with hormones at levels 100 times greater than you see at any other naturally occurring time of life. So what does that do to a pregnant woman's brain?
Hormones are biologically active substances capable of affecting how the brain functions.
Laura Glynn is Associate Professor of Psychology at Chapman University.
Many are familiar with the idea that during pregnancy, reproductive hormone levels, things like estrogens and progesterone, rise dramatically. What is less recognized is the fact that there are also profound changes in the stress hormone system. And one result of this is that it stimulates the body's main stress axis. So as gestation progresses, maternal levels of stress hormones rise throughout gestation.
Scientists have also recently discovered that these stress hormones restructure the woman's brain in a way that actually primes her for maternity, a process they call maternal programming.
Maternal programming is this idea that mothers are sort of made, not born, and that the hormone changes that occur during pregnancy play a role in shaping the maternal brain and behavior to optimize mothering.
That squeaking is the sound of a rat. If our knowledge of the physical changes in a woman's brain is only just scratching the surface, we can at least say that we've been to the very core of Planet Pregnant Rat. Craig Kingsley is a professor of psychology at the University of Richmond and a leading expert in the effect of the reproductive experience on the brain. His experiments on rats have revealed the remarkable neurological developments brought on by pregnancy.
We started looking at the area of the brain, it's called the medial preoptic area, and we found that there were changes to neurons in that part of the brain that tracked where the female was in pregnancy. The analogy we used was a car at a light sort of spinning its wheels, just, you know, revving up, and then going when the time's right. That's what that part of the brain seems to look like, is that the female is able to respond to her pups when they're present because of significant hormonal-induced changes to the neurons in that part of the brain.
The pregnant rat's brain is effectively upgraded from being a city runabout to a sports car ready to step on the accelerator when the demands of motherhood hit. But it turns out the neurons are also being rewired in other parts of the brain.
We extended that work to another area of the brain that isn't involved in maternal behavior but is involved in learning and memory. And this is called the hippocampus. And in this part of the brain, hormones stimulate the production of these tiny projections off of a portion of the neuron called dendritic spines. And they look like thorns that you might see on a branch from a rose bush. And the more spines on the neuron, the more surface area there is.
Greater surface area means increased performance. Now, that's all very well, but do these neurological changes in the brain have any influence on the way mums actually behave? Craig and his team tested a couple of hypotheses.
We had two predictions. One was that pregnant females should show improvements in cognitive behaviors like learning and memory because it represents a way for them to more efficiently forage out in the environment, and then they get back to their nest more quickly. The second prediction was that out in the wild, as the female is foraging, she comes across predators and she comes across other dangers that she has to deal with. And so our second prediction was that she would show less fear and anxiety out in the environment.
Sure enough, Craig's predictions were verified.
pregnant females were far better than virgin females at finding food hidden within a maze. They also became fearless. But can we really learn about the human brain by studying rats? I cling fondly to the idea that consciousness, free will, self-awareness, that whole higher human purpose bundle, means that our behaviour is predicated on a little more than a surge of hormones.
The brains of the rats are very similar to human brains, they're just smaller, but they have the same parts and pieces. In fact, you couldn't tell a human neuron from a rat neuron if you were highly trained.
There may be similarities, but do we have any evidence that this rewiring is echoed in the human brain? I tracked down a psychologist who's been studying the behaviour of mothers-to-be.
Hello.
Hello, I'm Zoe.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Rebecca Pearson.
We've come to Oakfield House at the University of Bristol, where I'm going to be asking Dr. Rebecca Pearson about her experiments on pregnant women and non-pregnant women. Hopefully I'll be able to take part in one myself. Let's see how I do. So explain what led you to study the pregnant brain.
As a psychologist, I'm interested in well-being and mental health. We know how important the mum and the mum relationship early on in childhood is for long-term mental health. So I became very interested in the role of maternal behaviour. And what I began to realise is if you look at animal studies and just instinctively, especially when I became pregnant myself, that this doesn't happen the minute the baby's born. This happens in the 9 months that you're pregnant. However, there's incredibly little research in humans about this. So I really wanted to try and understand what's going on.
Rebecca recruited a sample of 101 first-time pregnant women at 11 weeks gestation, early in their pregnancies and before their hormone levels would have started to rise. She subjected them to a number of experiments, which were then repeated at 37 weeks gestation. First up was an attention task.
There's lots of information around us at any one period of time, and as humans, what we do is we process what's most relevant. So I was interested in what parts of the environment pregnant women start responding to.
Rebecca's hypothesis was that pregnant women would start displaying a heightened response to stimuli relating to babies. She agreed to demonstrate her attention task with the help of her colleague Laura, who was 37 weeks pregnant.
It's presenting Laura with lots of different pictures relating to adults and babies, and what we're interested in is the extent to which the pictures hold Laura's attention and thereby slow her down when she's trying to detect other aspects of her environment. Okay, so what's going to happen is there's going to be a cross that appears in the middle of the screen. If this cross is a red cross, you simply press spacebar.
While pregnant Laura was working on the attention task, I asked Rebecca to explain her findings from this experiment.
What we found is that, again, early pregnancy, when women were on average 11 weeks gestation, we found that there was no particular difference in their reaction time. So they weren't more slowed down when the pictures were a crying baby or other pictures of neutral babies or adults. But then what we found quite clearly, by the end of pregnancy, women were showing a much slowed reaction time to crying baby pictures compared to the neutral or happy babies. We also found in our sample of non-pregnant women that they were the same as those in early pregnancy. So again, this emerged from early pregnancy to late pregnancy.
Rebecca found that pregnant women were slowed down by an average of 50 milliseconds when faced with distracting images of crying babies, and that the more slowed down they were, the more they felt that they bonded with their babies after birth. I was keen to see how I matched up to the 37 weeks pregnant Laura. So I took the test, clicking my way through a number of stages featuring pictures of babies in various moods, and awaited my results.
So you've crunched Laura's results now, and you seem quite enthusiastic about these.
So we see that Laura's reaction time to find the line when it's a crying baby here was 685 milliseconds. But when it's the other stimuli, she averages at 531 milliseconds. So she's slowed down by over 100 milliseconds when there's a picture of a crying baby. So now we'll look at your data. Okay, so this time we've got, in response to crying babies, 646 milliseconds, and overall neutral and happy babies, 662. So this time they're actually very similar, as in you're about 15, 20 milliseconds difference, something like that. But the crying babies weren't slowing down Zoe's responses, which is very different to the pregnant women who we saw was very slowed down, which is consistent to what I found in my PhD over lots of different women doing this.
Rebecca also discovered that by 37 weeks gestation, pregnant women's blood pressure rises faster when they're played the sounds of crying babies like this than when they're played other stressful noises like this. In her final experiment, Rebecca discovered that pregnant women develop a hypersensitivity to signs of threat, as signalled by the emotions on the faces of those around them. Rebecca believes that her experiments all point to one conclusion.
I would argue that this does provide evidence for this maternal programming idea, because we're finding that from early to late pregnancy, our attentional systems are prioritising different stimuli, that our physiological systems again seem to be prioritising different stimuli, and our perception skills have changed, they have increased. So I think that although we haven't seen changes directly in the brain with this study, we've seen changes in cognitive psychological abilities that we know are underlined by certain parts of the brain, which are changing during pregnancy, as we know from animal studies.
I wonder if this research gives... I've actually forgotten what I was... No, wait. Does this work give scientific support to one of the most commonly reported side effects of pregnancy? Memory loss, momnesia, or, to put it at its most tabloid, mushy brain?
Using shampoo instead of toothpaste.
Missing appointments.
Forgetting old friends' names.
Putting laundry in the bin.
Forgetting how to drive home from work.
Using milk instead of detergent.
Losing the ability to count.
Searching for the phone while speaking on it.
Pouring wine on breakfast cereal.
Leaving the house barefoot.
Around two-thirds of women report some form of memory loss or fuzzy thinking during pregnancy. Craig Kingsley believes that this is a side effect of the changes taking place in the brain.
When you look at what's happening over the course of pregnancy, the brain is undergoing a tremendous amount of structural change. So there's a fundamental rewiring that's going on in the brain. And as anyone who's ever had to deal with driving through a construction site, you know that there are going to be disruptions and delays and problems as the construction is ongoing. But the aim of the construction is to have an efficient system at the end. Once the brain has undergone the hormonal stimulation, you have a much different organ than you did before. There may be certain annoyances that come along with that, but the bottom line is that the female's brain is much more attuned to the care and protection of that offspring than it was before.
It may feel as if that lets you off the hook, rather, to find that your flabby brain may have been hardwired. But the idea that mothers' brains are primed for maternity during pregnancy could have many more far-reaching and, frankly, rather worrying implications. Justine Roberts, co-founder and CEO of Mumsnet.
There is a danger, I think, that if you follow through to the extreme what the message of this science is, that women will think that they must not work through pregnancy, which automatically will have an impact on their employment prospects, and that it's only them, out of them and their partner, who really is capable of staying at home and looking after the child.
And there's another problem. What about all those women who can't get pregnant and others who have decided to adopt? Gay couples. Are they doomed to be substandard parents because their brains haven't been primed?
With regard to those who don't give birth to their children, I want to underscore the fact that maternal programming is a process that is ongoing, and a piece of that process is interaction with offspring or the baby. And this in itself will most likely have their own effects on biology and the brain. This biological maternal programming piece is but one piece of this very complex puzzle related to how parents develop and create these bonds with their children.
What's being suggested here is that people's brains are able to be moulded by the very experience of bringing up babies, even if they haven't actually given birth to them. Craig Kingsley again.
My intention isn't to make people feel guilty. If you think of it as being on a continuum, you can express the same kind of plasticity by being affectionate with pets, the social and the sensory stimulation from pets or from adopting children. These things will also change the brain in the same direction that we see in terms of actually going through pregnancy in under more natural or normal circumstances. But the plasticity is there. It's just waiting to be expressed either through social stimulation or in these other sensory ways.
That is the sound of a fetus's heartbeat as it slowly grows inside the womb. It's not surprising that the research into the changes taking place in the mother's brain is leading scientists to investigate their impact on the baby. Laura Glynn.
Understanding maternal programming is critical for guiding and informing our understanding of another phenomenon called fetal programming. Fetal programming is this idea that what goes on in the prenatal period has lasting implications for health and development of the offspring throughout the lifespan.
So the mother isn't the only one being programmed during pregnancy. The fetus is too. But it turns out that this leaves it vulnerable to adverse events. We have already found out that it's the surge in stress hormones that begins the process of maternal programming. But some researchers believe that the much higher levels of stress brought on by external events, such as a bereavement, can have a serious and lasting effect on infant health. To find out more, I went to meet perinatal psychiatrist Professor Carmina Pariente at the Institute of Psychiatry at King's College London.
Hi, I'm Zoe. Hi. Lovely to meet you.
Postnatal depression has a huge public profile, but prenatal or kind of antenatal depression does not have anything like that. Why do you think that is?
You're perfectly right. We talk a lot about postnatal depression, but we don't talk about antenatal depression. And I think there are probably a variety of reasons, some of them cultural and social. There's an expectation that a woman who is pregnant has to be happy, no matter how life is difficult for her. And this really makes it difficult for a woman to admit that she's not feeling well.
What effects can we discern of stress on the child, both in the immediate term and in the long term?
All the data consistently show that children of mothers who are depressed in pregnancy are 3 times more likely to become themselves depressed or having other psychological problems. So it's a really powerful effect. We also know that offspring of women who are depressed during pregnancy tend to encounter more often stressors in their life. They tend to, for example, being bullied at school. They tend to put themselves into a situation of stress from other aspects of the environment. And this is probably because the changes in the uterine environment that occur when a mother is depressed creates long-lasting effect on the behavior of the child and on the predisposition to develop depression. We know also of a range of other consequences, including problem with the physical health and higher risk of obesity and diabetes, but the focus of my work is on the consequence from a mental health point of view.
Within the scientific community, some are skeptical about this data, both the strength of it and the way it's extrapolated. Elizabeth Armstrong is an associate professor of sociology at Princeton University.
The principal weakness of this literature is that we're often looking at observational studies and we're trying to understand causal mechanisms based on correlations rather than being able to test directly. We have only observational studies to go on, and those studies are always going to produce weaker evidence than clinical trials.
A clinical trial in this case would mean subjecting a group of pregnant women to extreme stress and comparing their birth outcomes to those of a control group who had regular chilled-out pregnancies. It can't be done. No ethics committee on earth would clear it.
It's hard for us to be sure that the stress is responsible for the outcomes that we observe and to completely eliminate all of the other potential factors that could cause negative outcomes. A woman who is prone to anxiety and nervousness is going to be a stressed out pregnant woman. And once the baby's born, she may respond to the baby with the same kind of parenting style, a more anxious parenting style, a more hyperreactive parenting style, and it can be hard for us to really disentangle the stress during pregnancy from the mother's parenting style postpartum or the parent's parenting style, again, not to put all the emphasis on the mother.
Carmina Pariente again.
It's a legitimate observation, and we're limited in the kind of research we can do in humans. But the experimental studies that we can do, for example, in animals, try to mimic situation of stress during pregnancy, confirm that we have exactly the same picture. So that just by creating a situation of stress, of severe stress during pregnancy, is enough to change the development and the trajectory of the behavior in the offspring in animals. So I think the evidence is there and it's quite clear.
The trouble is that humans are slightly more complex than other animals. All sorts of factors could affect these research findings. But Carmina certainly is confident that stress is central.
Now, obviously, in humans, there is other confounders that also probably participate to this association between depression in pregnancy and the offspring increased risk of developing depression. For example, a mother may be more likely to smoke or to drink a little bit more of alcohol or to have slightly less careful antenatal care. But there is also a lot of evidence from animal studies where obviously you can control for all of this. And it is clear that stress in itself during pregnancy is enough to have this effect on the children.
My concern about this work is that, like so much research into pregnancy in early years, it attempts to locate every possible outcome for the fetus in maternal behaviour. Was she stressed? Did she drink? Did she eat soft cheese? The news is full of warnings telling pregnant women how they must behave.
Now, some new research suggests even small amounts of alcohol can affect the baby's IQ.
Pregnant women are being advised to avoid chemicals found in many household products, including moisturisers and shower gel.
Tommy says women are not sufficiently aware of the health risks associated with being overweight and pregnant.
Pregnant women could also avoid buying new furniture, fabrics, non-stick frying pans and cars.
The trouble with this stuff is that it plays down or often plain ignores social factors that can have a profound impact on birth outcomes. Elizabeth Armstrong.
I think women are getting blamed for the health of their children and the outcomes of their pregnancies in a huge number of ways. Prenatal stress is just one of the things that women are kind of held responsible for during pregnancy. In contemporary society, I think women have internalized tremendous responsibility for birth outcome. I think we have emphasized to an extreme degree the import of women's behaviors outside of any other effects on their pregnancies. And that can have the consequence of leading to a culture of blame and of attributing negative birth outcomes to a woman's behavior rather than to looking at broader environment or social circumstances that affect birth outcomes as well as the woman's behavior.
I put this to Carmina Pariente. This research, taken broadly, does seem to kind of pile yet more blame on mothers and more responsibility upon them to create a perfect womb environment that really is beyond their control to create. How would you respond to that criticism?
This is not about blaming women at all. If anything, this is about making society more responsible for pregnant women. It's our duty to protect the most vulnerable in our society, and pregnant women are, you know, especially if they are under condition of duress, they're really, really a very vulnerable group in our society that we should protect more. And by doing so, we're protecting not only the woman, but also her children and the next generation.
There is, however, a catch-22 about this research. Telling women that stress and depression harm their fetus is likely to exacerbate any existing emotional problems that they might be experiencing. Elizabeth Armstrong again.
A recent study found that 65% of pregnant women reported that they worried about how much stress they experienced during pregnancy. And this is regardless of their underlying stress levels, so that they're worrying about worrying in a way. And that paradoxically then, the messages about stress and the way we've translated our nascent scientific understanding of the relationship between stress and pregnancy may in itself increase their levels of anxiety and stress during pregnancy.
Carmina Pariente.
I think it's important that we clearly send the message to women who are pregnant, that there's not an ideal perfect pregnancy where a woman is never stressed or even distressed or worried. The women that we're talking about is women that, for a variety of reasons, suffer from clinically significant levels of depression. And they should get worried and they should come and seek help. And we want them, in a way, to get worried because we want to help them. In a way, we want to send two parallel messages, normalizing as much as possible for most women, but inviting women who are really suffering to seek help.
And did you have any truck with the idea that women shouldn't work during pregnancy, that they should be treated as they're already invalids?
I don't think there could be any rules on whether a woman should or should not work during pregnancy. I think a woman should make the choice that makes her feel better. Working in itself is not stressful, and I could argue that for a woman who wants to work, forbidding her to work would be very stressful. So it's about what woman wants and also, obviously, what woman is able to do.
So making discoveries about the link between stress and fetal health, do you think this should change the way society treats pregnant women?
Absolutely. It should remind us that a woman who is pregnant is the responsibility of the whole society and that we really have as a society a duty to protect and help a woman who is pregnant, because by doing that, we are protecting and helping the future generations. This means offering clinical help when needed. This means offering psychosocial support when needed. But this is really essential because pregnancy is a vulnerable period. And by allowing a woman to spend her pregnancy depressed or in a condition of extreme distress, we are really creating a trajectory not only for her, but for her child, for the next generation.
I'm back in the maternity ward at King's College Hospital, where 17 women have given birth today. The research into the rewiring of these women's brains during pregnancy is fascinating, despite the fact that it's still in its infancy. Not only is it telling us more about the roots of our maternal instincts, but it's helping us to understand how the chemical changes in the mother affect the fetus and can have long-term consequences for health. There are dangers, and they are real and concerning. We should be wary that such research isn't understood in a simplistic way that plays into the hands of those who might argue that a domestic role for women is biologically predestined, or, by the same logic, that unorthodox families are biologically inferior. But it would also be a great shame if our rather babyish cultural desire to see pregnancy as an unambivalently beautiful state were to get in the way of scientific inquiry, which is revealing the complex interplay between the mother and the fetus.
You can download many more BBC Radio 4 programmes for free. Find these at bbc.co.uk/radio4.